Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Finding someone on an online Catholic dating site shouldn't be like shopping for a blender. So why do most dating sites leave you feeling like you're shopping for a spouse? At Catholic Singles, we connect members through our unique user polls and activities, which help you discover other members and their personalities and interests. Because you're a person, not a profile picture. So stop shopping and start discerning. Trust your love story to the original Catholic dating site and use the promo code REDBOX at checkout for 20% off at catholicsingles.com.
Today, I am here to give you the assurance that I have not forgotten you.
If we want to see the new evangelization become more than just jargon, if we want to see it grow legs and gain traction and change the world, we have got to take seriously our responsibilities as husbands and fathers, and especially as sons of God.
I want to propose to you then that something that our world is desperately in need of in the midst of this crisis is Catholic Christian masculinity.
If you want to be a good father, then bring your children to confession with you.
I can't get there unless I become a man of ascesis, a man of asceticism, a man of training.
A man not doing penance, a man not disciplined, is not a man.
You guys have upped your game.
You know what, guys, I gotta say, I love this concept of being a show.
Warning, the Catholic Man Show is about to begin.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We are on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. I'm Adam Minahan here, sitting with David Niles, Juan on the buttons. We have Jim by the door, making sure no one's going to break in.
You just try to break in here. See what happens.
See what happens.
You just see what happens.
Don't even attempt it.
No, do it.
Do it and just see.
Attempt it. You just see what happens.
I do want to give a shout out to any new listeners that we may have with a new radio program that we're on in Texas, in Seymour, Texas. We're maybe picking up some new listeners. So if this is your first time listening to the Catholic Man Show, welcome. This is a radio show and podcast. You can find it on your favorite podcast.
And YouTube sensation.
And YouTube, yeah, I guess. You can also find it on all your favorite YouTube platforms.
Favorite
podcast platforms. That's what I was trying to say.
All of your favorite YouTube platforms.
And then you threw in the YouTube.
Such as YouTube.com. It's my favorite YouTube platform.
Right. So anyway, welcome to the show. There's three things we do every episode. We open, review, and enjoy a man beverage. We highlight a man gear, and then we have a mailing discussion. Tonight's discussion is going to be about... Oh, am I already boring you?
No, I'm just very tired.
Oh, okay.
It's okay. I'm just struggling.
Okay.
I rode the struggle bus over here.
Okay.
So, yeah. So it's fine.
Okay. This will be interesting then. No, the topic today is going to be purifying the memory, purifying the mind, purifying the memory. And I'm really excited about the topic. I think it'll be helpful for me personally.
Me too.
Because it's going
I
to be
also
something,
feel that way.
Something that I have struggled with in the past. And anytime I get a chance to talk to you, Dave, about it and have Juan's input and you guys get to hear it, then we can kind of work through it sometimes. So I'm really excited about it. That'll be the third thing that we do on the episode. But tonight,
yes,
well, let's break up in the whiskey. Maybe that'll wake you up a little bit.
Yeah, no, I think it will.
Tonight we're having the John Walker and Sons celebratory blend. It is the Johnny Walker 200-year anniversary of their distillery, and so they launched four different basically whiskeys for their celebratory 200 year, three of which have made it to the States to sell. This is one of them. This is the lowest end price wise of the three that are here. They have
what are we talking?
75. I think about 75 bucks.
It's 51%.
75.
It's pretty strong.
Mm-hmm. They have another one that's a blue. It's a Johnny Walker Blue Label variation.
Yeah.
And they have another one as well. So I'm excited about this to try it. You know, we had that 18 year recently, which was very good.
Yeah.
So they're celebrating the 200 year. John Walker, what he did was to get these blended whiskeys. I'm gonna pour. You can pour while okay. I'm talking here.
Okay.
So his dad, John Walker's dad, died. So John Walker, as a businessman, he sold the family farm and opened up a grocery store. And in this grocery store, throughout Scotland, a lot of times they'd have these single malts, but they were not bonded yet, so they were very inconsistent.
Which
right?
means they're not 5 years old.
No. It means that they're not guaranteed. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons.
In
yeah.
order to be a bonded whiskey, you have to be five. There's another thing, too, but you have to be at least 5 years old.
Yes. I think that's correct. Anyway, the consistency wasn't there, right? And so what John Walker would do at his grocery stores, he would blend these scotches together and bottle them up himself. And so that way, it was always guaranteed. It may not be the best scotch at that time, you know, but
it was going to be more consistent.
It was very consistent. When you walked in there to this grocery store and bought a bottle of scotch, you knew what you were getting. Well, then
that's back in the day when you could just do that. Take somebody else's product
and just kind of make it your own.
Put it together with another person of somebody else's product mm-hmm. and just sell it as your own product.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of do that today, too. There's a lot of people that do
that. You definitely cannot do that with liquor.
Well, not liquor, but other products we do.
Yeah.
And then his son, after it was passed down, his son took it, and when the Industrial Revolution was big and the railroads were going through, he made the first, like, commercial batch of scotch. And there's Old Highland Road, I believe is what it was called. It's probably on here. Old Highland Whiskey. And this is a commemoration of their first commercial blend that they made. So, one of the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So, raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
And cheers. You already smelt it a little bit. What did you...
I don't get a whole lot on the nose.
Okay, the nose... Here's the official taste notes from Johnny Walker. On the nose, this whiskey has sweet dried raisins, a subtle spice, and... Marzipan.
I know that's a thing. I don't know what it is, but mm-hmm. I know. Yes,
that is a thing.
That is a thing.
On the palate, it says the palate develops hints of roasted nuts, icing sugar sweetness, and a gentle peat. And then the finish is of soft pepper.
You're talking on the palate. Did you move to the palate? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, okay. I had the palate. The palate was hints of roasted nuts, icing sugar sweetness, and gentle peat.
Yeah.
And then the finish is a soft pepper.
It is a nice, there's some nice peat there. Honestly, I like it. I think it's very good. And for $75, I think that is a good, this is fairly priced at $75. What do you think?
That is really weird, though, that you get that iced sugar, like icing sugar.
Yeah, it is definitely there. But it's not sweet.
No, but you can just tell, like...
It's weird that the icing is there without it being a sweet
overtly
flavor.
Overtly sweet.
It's like, it tastes like icing, but it doesn't taste sweet.
Right. I'm a sucker for, like, good presentation with whiskeys. You know, when we bring out a whiskey with...
You know, they count on that.
I know, but yeah. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with it because, you know, when you bring out a whiskey with other men, you're having a leisurely time or a celebratory time, you know, you make it a thing. You make it an ordeal, you know, and so I like to be able to incorporate the Glencairn glasses.
Like when women get together, they say, I'm going to go get the baby. I'm going to go get it. You know, they make a big deal. Like the baby's sleeping. I'm going to go get the baby. And then the men, they're like, hey.
I'm going to go get the whiskey.
I'm going to bring out the scotch.
That is a terrible
analogy.
I'm going to
get it.
But
I'm going to get it. It's over there. I'm going to bring it out.
But I like the box. It's like a trifold box.
It's a cool box.
Has a nice feel to it.
I bet that box would burn well.
They also... Do you know why they have the bottle is squared?
No.
You know, most bottles, if you look behind us, they're all round.
Yeah.
They made them square because to help prevent... breaking when they're packed up in ships when they were distributing around the world.
Nice.
So they found out, you know, if they're squared, they will have less chance of the bottles breaking.
Mm-hmm.
And then for marketing purposes, they put their label 20% at the time. It may be a little bit more now, but 20% at an angle to stand out even more. So if you're going in there, you see a a squared bottle that's already at the time something different, and then the label at a angle, it's like, oh well, that must be a Johnnie Walker bottle.
Yeah.
Because that was the only scotch that was doing that at the time.
I didn't realize Diego owned the Johnnie Walker label.
Yes, I believe that's
Diego
correct.
Is a huge company. In fact, a lot of people, there are probably a lot of listeners who own Diego stock, and they might not realize you own a little piece of Johnnie Walker. That's kind of nice.
Juan, what do you think? Do you like the whiskey?
Oh, yeah.
I really enjoy it.
I'm a big fan.
For a peat beginner, it's a really good, because it's just...
Yeah, because for somebody who's just stepping into the peat game, like, Jim, you don't like a whole lot of peat, but this doesn't have a whole lot of peat in it, right? It's good. Yeah, I mean, it's very subtle. It's not going to be
It's a little salty, though, still, you know? Like, it kind of reminds me a little bit of an Islay scotch.
Yeah. It's very unique. I like the uniqueness I was a little hesitant. I bought it because it's a limited edition. They only made it, I don't know how many, but they only made it so many of them. And so I was like, well, I'll go ahead and try it. But I was a little skeptical, thinking it's probably going to be, you know, just kind of like their double black or something like that label. And when that happens, you know, you're kind of let down with the celebratory, because, you know, to me, it's like, that's kind of a marketing ploy, right? It's like, oh, well, it's 200 years. Let's just slap on a new label.
Let's take the same thing we've had and repackage it. Right. Yeah.
But it's very unique compared to the double black or the green.
I'm a big fan of the green. I like the green.
I do like the green label. St. Stephen Hool is the one who turned us on to the green label.
Yeah, well, and... I haven't been in there in a while, but Park Hill South, there for a while, they were selling it for $36.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like a $70 bottle. I mean, I don't remember.
Other places.
I don't remember how much it cost. I just remember that it was right next to the black, which is typically cheaper. The black was $40 and the green was $36.
Right.
So I was buying them two bottles at a time.
Yeah, it was very good. So anyway, if you have a chance to go buy John Walker and Son Celebratory Blended Scotch,
it's a good
whiskey.
One. Yep.
It's a good one. I would recommend it. So when we get back, we're going to jump into the man gear and then into the man topic for on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
This segment of the Catholic Man Show is brought to you by the Catholic Woodworker. Go to thecatholicwoodworker.com for heirloom quality home altars, crucifixes, and rosaries.
It's also the only place where you can get the official rosary of the Catholic Man Show. Type in promo code TCMS for 10% off all purchases. TCMS for the Catholic Man Show. CatholicWoodworker.com. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan, Juan Posada, and Jim Spencer. This is the Man Gear segment of the show. And I'm a big fan of the Man Gear today.
I am too, because listen, the weather is changing, it's getting cooler outside, and that means one thing for me. It means deer season is approaching quickly.
Yeah.
And I was able to review my deer cams this weekend, and I am pumped. There's at least deer there, so I'm really excited. And one of the things to prepare for deer season is to make sure that you have a knife that is sharp.
Yeah, because if you catch a deer, is that what they say in the biz?
I don't think so.
If you kill yourself a deer, you're going to need a knife that is prepared, that's up to the task. Okay? So the man gear for today is this knife sharpening kit that I have. What I have here is a Lansky. Let's see if there's an official... Oh, watch out. Watch out. I'm just throwing stuff around. This is a Lansky knife sharpening kit. Lansky is the brand. Lansky has been making knife sharpening stuff for a long time. It's a very old company. And if you're on the YouTube, I'll show you what's going on here. Okay, so Basically, it's a help me describe this, Adam, because it's kind of hard to describe. It's a like a little bitty vice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's two pieces of metal that are screwed together that clamps down onto the knife
that hold the knife in place, and then behind it are holes, like these slots that represent different degrees of sharpness. Okay, and so what we have as part of the kit are these knife sharpening stones that you attach a rod to, and they go into those slots. And so when you sharpen the knife, you just go back and forth with that rod in the slot the whole time, so you're always sharpening at exactly the same angle. Even when you switch between the different stones, you just are always coming back to that same angle. So a stone, you know, like the Japanese invented the sharp knife, okay? And almost exactly a year ago, I realized that I had never used a sharp knife in my life. At the pig slaughtering event, Brandon Sheard was there, and he did some episodes
He'll
with us.
He'll be on an episode in November with us.
I don't think I'm going to be there at the one that's coming up. That's Mary's birthday, November 7th.
Oh.
And so it's like, I really want to go.
Right.
Okay.
But as a dad.
But it's my daughter's birthday, so.
It's the same thing like opening deer season. My wife scheduled family pictures on the opening day.
Oh, no, that's something that can be rescheduled.
Well,
I can't reschedule my daughter's birthday.
I really wanted to, but it means a lot to Haley. She can't, like...
It can be rescheduled.
Well...
She didn't even check with you?
We are doing family pictures, so...
So anyway, he showed up with these just knives. I mean, they weren't, like, anything, like, sweet. They just were, like, kind of old, thin... Mm-hmm. knives.
Mm-hmm.
But they would, it was like butter when you cut something with it. It was at that moment I realized this is the first time I've ever used a truly sharp knife. And so I talked to him about it, and he uses the Japanese whetstone method.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like, it's like thousands of years old. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to get a knife that is the sharpest it can ever be, that's probably the best way to do it. But it takes, you know, hours, you know, maybe 1,000 hours of practice before you can ever do it. Because if you're doing a on a stone by mm-hmm. hand, you have to, what you have to be good at is maintaining the exact same angle the whole time.
Consistency.
Right, exactly. Because as you're moving that knife across the stone, if you have just one moment where you lift the knife too much and you dig the blade into the stone, you have just ruined
right
everything that you've been working to achieve, right? So that's what I like about this knife sharpening kit, is because it has these slots that ensure you're always bringing that stone across the blade at mm-hmm. the same angle all the time. You know that you are achieving sharpness as you progress from on the different stones, the high grit stones down to the very fine.
Even ceramic.
Ceramic stone at the very end. Yeah, so Lansky, and there's other companies, there's other brands that are essentially the same. I don't know about the other ones. I know I really like this one. The one I have here is the 5-stone model. You can see there's black, red, green, blue, and yellow stones that all represent different levels of
grit.
Honestly, I don't think you need 5. I don't know if they have like a 4 or a 3, but I think if they did, you're not, I think that would be just fine. Because when you do all 5, and because there are 5, I feel the necessity to use all 5.
Right.
Like I don't feel like I can skip one because mm-hmm. it's there.
Right.
You're supposed to
it's there for a reason.
You're supposed to go in order, right?
Right. Yeah.
And that's just kind of like my own temperament.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes it takes like an hour to sharpen these knives, okay? So it's on the one hand, it does take a lot of the skill out of sharpening the knife. Like, you don't have to be a Japanese knife sharpening master, but you're still not just, you know, walking up to a grinder and, you know, it's not like you're knocking out a sharp knife in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Not that there's anything wrong with doing that, But on a grinder, you're just never going to be able to achieve this level of sharpness. So when I got this kit, I got addicted to sharpening knives. As weird as that may sound, I assure you that it is true, and I enjoyed every minute of it. I definitely had some Band-Aids that I was sporting, you know, like by the time I was done, because I'd be watching a movie, you know, I'd have like this knife in here and I'd be watching a movie just like grinding or something, sharpening, and it's so repetitive that you kind of like stop paying attention to what you're doing, because you don't really have to focus on it very much, that you go, and it like the stone would like roll over on me, and I kept hitting my knuckles on the, just pushing it on the blade of the knife, but you know, at some point it's really sharp.
Right.
And so I had all these like cut marks on my knuckles, and also I didn't have any hair on my forearm, my left forearm, because
you kept testing it.
Like, yeah, at the very end I would like, oh yes, look at that, it just shaved that arm.
But you
so
can't get
bare.
It too sharp.
Okay, so yes, I'm glad you said that, because you have to know the knife you're sharpening before you decide, even on this kit, because the very sharpest angle that it has is 17 degrees, and it even tells you in the instructions is a very sharp knife.
Like a fillet knife.
It's a fillet, or like a razor blade. Like if you have a razor blade that you use to shave with.
A straight edge.
Like that's how sharp we're talking, okay?
Wow.
And so it's the kind of thing that you would be, like a fillet, when you're cutting a fish, it's a very delicate meat. There's not a lot of resistance that it's encountering, okay? But if you're skinning a deer, you know, and depending on your skill with the knife, if you're not skilled where you are making sure that the knife is not, you don't want to be like coming in not straight with the knife, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not slicing at a perfectly straight angle, then you're going to be putting like sideways resistance on the very edge of the knife. Okay, so my wife, we had these, just kitchen knives. They were kind of cheap kitchen knives. And I was sharpening them at the 17 degree, and then I was finished. It was frustrating because I just spent an hour sharpening this knife, and I just took my thumb and felt the edge of the knife, and it just went and just broke right off.
Because it was too brittle.
It was too sharp. That knife was not good enough to hold that kind of edge.
Yeah.
Okay, so then I had to resharpen it, because otherwise it's a totally worthless knife. Because at 17 degrees, the thing is that the blade, like the actual edge is very long. I mean, that's a large edge. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you look at a knife, the edge is like really polished and shiny. And typically when you get a knife, it's real thin.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go and sharpen it at 17 degrees, it will double. Like mm-hmm. that knife you have right there, it would be twice as long.
Mm-hmm.
And so that just kind of shows you how sharp it is and how brittle that point can be. So like this, Adam, you were telling me earlier, you use this to skin a deer. You do not want a 17 degree.
No, I would not want
that. Edge.
It'd be too sharp.
It's too sharp.
Yeah, it'd be too sharp. I really like this knife that I have, especially for cleaning deer, because it's a single piece of metal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of...
It's what they call full tang.
Yes, full tang. Yes, well done. You know what? 5 points for you.
Thank you.
And it has a really good finger grip to it, and it's not very long, so I know exactly where the blade basically stops.
Is that I've never skinned a deer, so is that
it's good because
is that an advantage in skinning a deer, you think?
Well, for me it is. I'm not an expert in it because I've only skinned probably about 4 deer.
Uh-huh.
But every time, you know, you don't want to cut the wrong spot at the wrong time. You know, there's systems I would say
that
in place.
Universally a general principle.
And you want to make sure that you're not poking things that you're not supposed to be poking.
Also universally true.
And you want to make sure that you're not going through.
Especially with a knife.
Yeah. So I just really like it because it's kind of dummy proof for me, because I know about how long it is. So don't worry about it.
There's a lot more to be said about sharpening knives. I really like this knife sharpening kit. Once again, it's a Lansky sharpening kit. It comes with oil, comes with everything that you need to get your knives, kitchen knives, pocket knives, ridiculously sharp.
When we get back, we're going to talk about purifying the mind, purifying the memory. We'll be right back.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So, go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. Adam Minhan here, sitting with David Niles. We're going to talk about purifying the mind, purifying the memory. So hang in there with us through this discussion.
If you can remember.
Dave, one of the things that we talk about on the show all the time is we talk about virtue. We talk about making sure to know yourself as a man, know your strengths, know your weaknesses.
Yes.
Put yourself in situations that you'll most likely succeed in. Don't, avoid the temptation of sin. There's times that continued trying to grow in my spiritual life, and I turned away from the heathen lifestyle that I lived back in the day. Those sins can creep up. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that a lot of times an example is, a snooze button is like the worst thing ever invented because
you like it so much.
Because you like it so much. And so what happens is you no longer have to think, when my alarm goes off, I don't have to get up. Right? Because I can hit the snooze button.
That is what you think.
That's what you think. I don't have to get up anymore. Yeah. Like that's the, and then you have to start all over again and get up all over again. Right? And so you entertain the idea of, I don't have to do something that I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
I was supposed to get up. Oh, I don't have to do that. I can hit the snooze button and go back to sleep.
For my first decision of the day.
I'm going to fail.
Go back to bed.
Right. So,
starting the day off well.
Right. So it's the same thing. If you entertain these ideas of sin, all of a sudden they start creeping up, and then the entertaining these ideas become temptations, and then you put yourself in bad situations where you could possibly fall again.
Yeah. Do you think that chronic use of the snooze button is indication of a lack of virtue?
Dude, I've had a mental war with myself on this because I used to be a very big snooze button guy.
Yeah. I have honestly never been a snooze person. Just, I'm kind of a morning person,
Right.
So.
Yeah, you are a morning person. I'm not a morning person, but I have started training myself to get up at the same, early.
It's good.
It's a good thing to do.
Getting up early is
good. Heroic minute.
Is good.
I mean, Jose Maria Escriva recommend the heroic minute.
I can just think of no reason to use the snooze button. It's like, on the one hand, if you say, the last 15 minutes before I get up, I snooze. Don't do that. All you're doing is interrupting your sleep for 15. You could have just stayed in good, restful sleep for 15 minutes. You just, when it's time to get up, just be a man and get up.
Right.
Stop snoozing.
Right.
It's not helping you in any way. It's only, the only thing snoozing is doing for you is making you a worse person.
Right.
Just to put it that way.
That way.
See, if I can put it strong.
Right. Well, that very anti Hector Molina of you. you have to Dave, you said many times on the show, you just want to get people to stop what you're doing and think about what you're doing.
Think about this.
Think
for
about
a
what
second.
You're doing. And so, if you stop and think about, why am I entertaining these ideas of past sins and glorifying these past sins reveling in these past sins? It's because you're perceiving something that is not good to be good for yourself. You're perceiving this disorder or this appetite of desire that you may have that is not good for you. And you're perceiving it to be good for you.
Right.
Right. And so.
Yeah. So I'm glad you said this because after college, Adam and I both had a conversion
Mm-hmm. And we were like, it was something we kind of ended up doing together. And, you know, our friendship was a big role in that. But I went through this phase where I was converted, no longer wanting to do the things of my past, mm-hmm. but still found myself bragging about them. You know, in at certain company, I would be like, I used to be big, you know,
back
big
in the day.
Let me tell you about the sins I used to, you know, and right. I would literally kind of revel in them, mm-hmm. like what you're saying. And at some point I realized I'm bragging about the sins I used to commit. That's not the right way to treat sin.
No, it's actually, you know, scandal.
At my judgment, I will be like just demolished. Mm-hmm. At just the thoughts of the sins I've committed. And once again, here, sitting here bragging about them. I mean, it's like spitting in Christ's face, mm-hmm. when you glorify the sins. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's like almost like you're committing them all over again. Because at some point, you're enjoying the fact that you have committed them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I do. And what can be a temptation sometimes is, even though, so we're talking about, you know, a lot of times with habits, you know, if you can do a virtuous act, but that doesn't mean you have the habit of doing, of being virtuous. Similarly, you can have the habit of a vice.
Yeah. A vice is a habit.
A vice is a habit. Yeah. Right. The habit of a vice. And so even if you try to be virtuous, you may.
I don't think you need to say habit of a vice. It's just a vice.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's redundant. You're right. Yeah. But if you've been in a habit of doing something that is contrary to natural law or you know, that is some sort of sin, it's easy to fall back into.
Yeah.
And any time that you entertain the idea of a sin, then all of a sudden that opens the door for the devil, right?
Sure.
That's the playground for the devil. I mean, that, you know, Eve should have never even entertained the idea that the serpent was talking to her.
Right.
Right. Adam should have never allowed that to happen.
Yeah.
So just entertaining that idea opens yourself up to
killed that snake.
Yeah.
To should have just stepped on it.
To sin.
The old ways.
Right.
Because you know them. You know, right. They're easy to do. So, you know, they say it's like riding a bike for certain things. You know, mm-hmm. like, oh, you used to do this so much. It's just like riding a bike. Sin can be that same way.
Right. And I can't tell you how many times I've had to go back into confession, right. and say, like, listen, Father, these are the sins that I've committed. And I know that I've said this to you, you know, the last eight months, this is the exact same thing that I've said.
Right.
But it's only because I started entertaining this idea and it was a snowball effect, and one thing led to another thing, and then all of a sudden I'm in a situation where
right.
my anger, I'm rage, you know, there's sins of lust or, you know, whatever it is.
It's so hard not to tell the priest, like, let me tell you how this happened.
Right, I know, it's just, it is.
Like, I just can't, you need to know that I didn't.
I want you to know.
I didn't mean to do it. I ended up doing it, but I didn't mean to in the beginning.
I'm St. Paul. Like, I don't want to do the sins that
right.
I...
It was a slow... It was a gradual thing, and...
Right. So the memory is an important part of when you're developing virtue, when you're developing the virtuous life, to make sure that you have it under control. You know, memory is, you know, sometimes it's called, like, the imagination, is a very central part, or, like, the faculty of the soul.
Okay.
And...
So the memory and imagination are... I can see how the two are very linked.
Very linked.
But are you saying that people would refer to them kind of as the same thing?
At times, yeah. Some philosophers have.
Interesting.
It depends on what we're talking about. There's different types of memory that we're not going to go into that today. But
okay.
The thoughts that take place in the memory can either, like, weigh us down to death, you know, of like, I can't believe I did these sins. I can't believe, you know, I'm so unworthy. Or it can propel us to become a saint, right? You know, it can be the St. Augustine's of, you know, yes, I did. I did have a sinful life, but I have given that over to Christ, and I'm now a new man. He makes all things new. So there's a temptation in memory of just reveling in all the sins of your past and becoming, you know, burdened down with all these sins. But that's the part of, you know, the importance of going to confession. One of the things readings that I was reading as a Dominican friar, I can't remember who it was, but he said, the journey of the spirit is vast expanses of the memory leads to self-discovery and furthermore to the encounter with God.
Wait, say that again.
The journey of the spirit in the vast expanses of memory leads to self-discovery and furthermore to the encounter with God. Because the more you know, the more you can... you can have encounters right. with God. Okay. You know, the more you know about yourself, the more you can have encounters with
okay,
God.
Okay, so like in here we're saying knowledge and memory are the same, because which is true. Like, you do not know anything that you have not memorized. Right.
So memory masters time to some degree, since it's able to connect to the present and was experienced in the past with what will happen in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives you other sub-virtues that you can possibly have, like foresight. The virtue of foresight, it has a big part in prudence, playing in sure. prudence. But the importance of like being weighed down and with your memory, you know, you're weighing down all these things that are maybe heavy on your soul that you've committed in the past or that you're struggling with now. Many of the saints have said that the forgiveness of sins is God is precisely the highest and most intimate form of purification of the memory.
Okay.
So to purify your memory is the forgiveness of sins by God.
And because now you have that knowledge that those sins have been forgiven.
Right. And it's they said because of the divine forgiveness, really erases and destroys the sin, so the weight does not burden the conscience anymore.
What are you pulling most of this from, like, one or two sources? Like, no, curious.
I'm pulling from, like, St. John of the Cross, Gary Gulu Lagrange, St. Thomas Aquinas, Aristotle. Those are the main the main ones.
Okay.
And then this Dominican
Friar. The reason I ask is because that, who your sources are, and more importantly, when they come from, is going to play a key role in one of my questions for you later.
Okay, cool. So one of the things that they, to help avoid these ideas where you're, like, you know, just tempted to think about sins that you've committed in the past is just confession.
That's easy.
To go to confession.
It's at least it's readily available.
Right. And so, well, hopefully in your diocese it is.
Yeah, hopefully.
But that's, you know, there's one thing that happened to me this last week. We're about to hit a break. Check out our YouTube because I'll continue this this story in between segments.
Talk 1.5 speed right now.
Right. I'm not a Ben Shapiro. So I was meeting a guy who is in my office complex, and he was a Catholic. Uh-huh. He is a Catholic, but he hasn't been practicing for like 3 years.
Okay.
And almost every time when this happens, it always comes back down to sex, right? It always comes back to sexual ethics. They don't want, they're trying to justify what they're doing
very
or whatever.
Common.
Very, very common. But he said, like, I just had this guilt. You know, I haven't been to Mass in 3 years. I haven't been to confession. I was like, man, go to confession. Go this weekend.
Just go
this weekend.
We can stop what we're doing right now.
And go.
And we can
and
both
do
go.
This. Yes. And he was very open to it. And so I'm hopefully going to get him to go next week at St. Mary's.
Go with him.
Yes, during lunch. So
nice.
Anyway, we'll be right back talking about purifying the mind and the memory. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan, Juan Posada, and Jim Spencer. Drinking a little bit of John Walker and Sons celebratory blend, which is just delicious. We all had to have a refill because it is so good. This is a good bottle of whiskey. You got $75 burning a hole in your pocket, you go get you some of this.
Yep.
We're talking about purifying the memory.
Right.
Okay, and so I have a question for you. If it's okay, are you available for questions at this point in the
sure.
conversation?
Yeah.
The reason I asked about all of the people that you were drawing this from is because I feel like in this realm, the game changed with pornography. When we're talking about purifying the memory, you mm-hmm. know, it's well documented that men especially have the ability to recall images. From especially pornographic images.
Well, imagination, images.
But sexual images, sexualized images have a particular potency in the male memory.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything in here about, because I know, you know, that there are a lot of men who, like, you know, this is part of their past,
sure.
but those images still haunt them and, you know, occur. It's like, you're not trying to bring them up, but they just present themselves to you sometimes. And the demonic forces can use mm-hmm. your own memories against you.
Sure.
Is there anything in here that they talked about? So they were living in a world pre, like, the idea of pornography just wasn't a possibility. What are you going to, like, etch it in stone or something? It just, it wasn't
wildly available like it is today.
Right, exactly. That's my question in whatever form is taken.
I'm curious.
Not
what
a question.
Is.
What about it? That's Adam. What about it?
Yeah. So I think that's a huge problem today. So I think that there's one thing you obviously, like we said earlier, you go to confession, get to confession if you've, you know, broken something about the sixth and ninth commandment. But then also you pray specifically to Our Lady of Inviolate. She's never, you know, she's been a conqueror of the sin of lust. And
that, Our Lady Inviolate.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
She's never been violated in any way. But St. John of the Cross talks about, he actually does talk about in Ascent to Mount Carmel, I believe is the book.
About the memory or the ideas, like the perverted, it's the Dark Night of the Soul.
Dark Night of the Soul. Yeah. So he talks about it. He says
he might. I haven't read Ascent to Mount Carmel, so he might talk about it in there also.
Okay.
But I know he does in Dark Night of the Soul.
I can't remember which one it is, but
I've read Dark Night of the Soul, and he talks about it.
Okay. So he says he tells us that harmful memories are gradually purified and healed by the theological virtue of hope, which we all have. If you're baptized, mm-hmm. your soul is infused with it through the virtue of baptism.
Yeah.
And so, but he said also replaying and reliving the painful memories is an obstacle to hope and happiness. So dwelling in these things are something that is not good, not healthy.
Yeah.
You know, it goes back to, like, as soon as you know that this is, that you're thinking about this, the thought has been implanted into your brain, you disregard it.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as that alarm clock goes off, you immediately get up.
And that can be so hard to do because if it's a sin of your past, that is so real for it's very real.
No doubt.
It's hard to disregard something that you know intimately.
So
you know?
He gives the suggestion to take it to adoration. To take it to the foot of Jesus, yeah. In front of him, face to face.
Seems like always good advice.
And say, you know, Lord, you know me better than I do. I struggle with this, and I want to get rid of it. You've died for my sins. Take it.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've said this before on the show, but adoration is a game changer. If you're not taking an hour of adoration a week, you need to.
Yeah, definitely.
But it goes back to also the theological virtue of hope. So he's talking about this, St. John of the Cross is saying that the theological virtue of hope is so important to conquering and purifying your memory, because your hope needs to be in Jesus Christ, not in what you've done before in your past. You know, he has died for your sins. He's open to your mercy, to his mercy.
Yeah.
And so you just need to cooperate with his grace.
And if you're thinking to yourself that, well, I'm just a huge sinner. One thing that Christ told Saint Faustina is that the greater the sinner, the greater the right he has to my mercy. He actually used the words that sinners have the right to his mercy. You know, it's almost like, when you just are born, when you have the right.
Inalienable rights.
Yeah, but anyway. So you just have that. That's like, that might haunt you a little bit, but his mercy is so real.
Absolutely. And I think the more you increase your prayer life, the more opportunities you have, obviously, for his mercy, but the more you can grow in the theological virtue of hope.
Yeah.
Emeritus Benedict XVI, he writes about this in his book, Theological Virtue of Hope. I think it's called The Virtue of Hope, but whatever that book is on hope that he
wrote. The thing about Pope Benedict, he's not like super creative on the titles.
Sometimes.
His titles are like as equally
as the Catholic Man
logical,
Show.
Logical
like
as
the Catholic Man
as
Show.
His books are. Yeah. They just make sense.
Right. But
so let me just
hold on. Let me get this.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
because Benedict XVI, he talks about the importance of theological hope and the correlation or the link in your prayer life. And he says prayer is an exercise of desire and an exercise and expansion of hope. And this hope is necessary for a redemption and salvation. So he says, place your hope in him who is pure, whole, and holy, and redirect your desires and passions to him. For everyone who thus hopes in him purifies himself as he is pure. That comes from 1 John. And it says, this hope is itself what purifies.
Mm. That's so beautiful. Thinking about hope as like a purifying force in your life.
Right. That's what gets...
It totally... I've never thought about that, but it That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. It totally is a purifying thing.
Right. And it's very interesting because, you know, nothing impure enters heaven. You know, even though you have inordinate desires that you have to, you know, get rid of at some point, or Christ has to get rid of for you if you cooperate with his grace.
Yeah.
You know, you have to burn those away. That's theologians are bashing me right now for using that word probably,
but so much other stuff.
Have to be able to purify. You have to be able to purify these things, and when you get into heaven, you no longer have the virtue of hope because you're there.
Yeah, there is no hope in heaven.
There's no hope in heaven.
What are you hoping for? You've got it already.
You have it all.
You only hope for things that you do not have at the moment.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this.
And that they have a reasonable, possibility to attain.
But the
you don't, you don't hope for things that are impossible, for instance.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
But the more you have a relationship with Christ, the more you have a relationship with your Creator, and you're able to open yourself up to these theological virtues that faith, hope, and love that you've been infused, your soul has been infused by the virtue of baptism.
Yeah.
The more you will have a purified intellect, a purified mind, a purified memory, to where you say, like, listen, I know I have built all these things in sand and they've been washed away. I don't have to worry about those anymore. I'm only looking towards the future.
Yeah.
Because every person is one confession away from becoming a saint.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So you can't dwell in all the things that you've committed in the past. And I know that, like, I just personally, the reason why I picked this topic is because I have done this upteen times, you know, of worried about things that I've done in the past, sins that I've committed. I've entertained those sins, which have led me to other sins, you know, that I've had, you know, that I was like, oh, I thought this sin wasn't an issue for me anymore. Why is this being brought back up? And I start replaying and understanding, like, well, what was I doing? Why did this happen? What was the time of day? How was I feeling? You know, why did I entertain these ideas? And I started realizing and knowing myself more of, oh, well, I was, at this time, I was hungry or tired or sleepy, or, you know, I wasn't around the guys that I needed to be around, or I wasn't, you know, being the best husband that I should be around my wife, or, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I started entertaining these ideas that I shouldn't entertain at all. I should immediately eradicate that from my mind. You know, there's sins that are, there's things that pop into your head all the time that are not healthy.
Right.
Right. You know, that are, you're like, wow, where did that come from? How did I humanly think about that? You know, that sounds like something a crazy person.
Well, St. John of the Cross talks about that as he grew in holiness, that, in fact, Jim and I were talking about this at Mass today, that, he was allowed to be afflicted by the worst, like the most perverted and just disgusting thoughts that would occur to him. But I want to just share some stuff that Christopher West talks about. So in his talk from the 90s, okay, mm-hmm. he gave this like 20 CD, back when they would put stuff on CDs. It's like a 20 cassettes, 10 CD set. I think I actually still have CDs about it. Well, on the theology of the body. And one of the things he talks about is this pornography, these ideas, you know, when these images come up, he says, and I used to do this, and I found that it helped, when you just take that image, don't run from it. But, I mean, this is assuming you have some understanding of the theology of the body, that the body is good and beautiful and, you know, expresses the love of, like, God. And he said, like, Lord, untwist the lie and show me the truth. Because in every pornographic image is truth and a lie. Okay, it's, and like what St. John Paul II says, is not that pornography shows too much of the body, but that it shows too little,
mm-hmm.
It shows too little of the person. It shows only the, you know, and so untwist the lie and show me the truth. And just taking that image up and not running from it, but offering it up mm-hmm. to our Lord and to, like, Lord, this is what's coming to me. Please sanctify this. Pray for the people.
Yep.
You know, in that moment, and that I have found to be the most, with specifically those kinds of images, very helpful and healing.
So I think that if you're wanting to make sure that you know, purify your memory, go to confession, take up an adoration hour. Ask Our Lady to purify your memory and make sure that you're living a prayerful life. Increase your prayer life so that way you can increase the infused virtues of hope.
Definitely.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
I didn't even get into like what Gary Gou Lagrange talks about, but I knew I had too much. I knew that there was going to be too much in the episode to actually get through. But that's okay.
What did Gary say?
So he was talking about forgetfulness of God prevents us from seeing that the present moment is also a vertical line which attaches it to the single instance of immobile eternity. So he talks about like that, you know, there's a vertical line of eternity and then there's a horizontal line of you know, what we're living in right now. You know, we live in a very linear mind frame, right? You know, yeah. Like one thing to the next thing to the next thing to the next thing, unless you get into like the Enlightenment era and the Enlightenment philosophers, and then they start going off the rail in
what
this
aspect. What a waste of thought the Enlightenment was. Like, wow, you had the ability to think about stuff, and that's the stuff that you came up with.
You decided to think about.
Thank you. Someone give this guy a participation trophy and send him home.
Right. So, he was talking about like the forgetfulness of God. Oh man, this is what I was wanting to talk about in the episode. Was, you know, the whole idea of Saint Paul talking about how we're always praying. We're always supposed to be praying, prayer without ceasing. And like, how do you do that? But it's always like just being mindful and like understanding the presence of God. Well, how do you do that if you're thinking about things or dwelling in memories that are not healthy or not holy thoughts? You can't do that.
Yeah.
So he talks about, you know, for the forgetfulness of God being present in all of eternity takes us away from the axis of the vertical and brings us back to the horizontal, which is never the line that you want to take as a Christian path, because, you know, this is just the ship that we're being sailed to our destination.
Yeah. And you know, you can actually pray for holy forgetfulness.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. I mean, and that's what Our Lady and Violet
priests
talks about.
Priests do, you know, before and after confession, or you know, with surrounding confession, that many priests do, that they will just forget everything. And I know some priests who say that that absolutely works. That when they leave the confessional, they literally just cannot remember anything that was said. And I think part of that is that they've trained themselves. You know, to mm-hmm. part of that is also probably a natural ability, but you know, grace builds on nature, and they have tried to make themselves naturally available to receive the grace, you know, to do that. But we can do that too with our own selves, because you know, at some point, if a sin is so far in your past, I mean, like, it's not like, it doesn't offer you anything. You could say, oh, well, your sins, you've learned something. Now you can help avoid them in the future. And, you know, that's true. Absolutely. But at some point, as you grow and grow and grow, a sin becomes so far removed from your present condition, it just offers you nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't need to, you already know, you already have the habits, the virtues that would have been learned. And so it's like, you just need, it's best just to forget about it, because
right. And well, and that's what they're talking about. Yeah. You know, right. You know, that's kind of like I was at least trying to say, is like as soon as that thought pops into your mind, you just like, nope, we're eradicating. I'm not remembering that anymore. I've confessed that sin. It's not something that I think about anymore.
Right. Right.
I'm not dwelling in that.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult because when you think about a sin of your past, There's like several things that happen. One of them is like the enticement. You remember the enticement towards the sin. You
know, the pleasure.
Exactly. You remember why you liked it, mm-hmm. why you did it, mm-hmm. what drew you towards it.
Mostly because of the concupiscible appetites.
Right. Exactly. The appetite element. Mm-hmm. Then there's the other thing where you can sit down and think like, oh yeah, well, what was it that, why did I fall to that sin? You know, like more analytically assess the situation. That's very helpful. Mm-hmm. Like, oh yeah, you know what? I didn't get any sleep the night before. I was really tired, and I
let my guard down.
And because of that, I skipped breakfast because I was trying to sleep in. So I was hungry and tired, you know, and he's like, you know, if
and
you can,
stressed from work.
Right.
And
so if you can put those pieces together,
mm-hmm.
we should do it. We could do a whole episode on going to bed on time. Like, honestly, there is a lot. It's like, if you don't go to bed on time, your whole day, your whole life starts to fall apart. The monks knew the monks.
Same with getting up.
Well, the monks know this. Like, you have to get up at a certain time. It's not like you can just not get up. Like, if you've got to go to work, you've got to go to work. It's not like you have the choice to like, well, I got to get my 8 hours.
There's a lot of people that do that these days.
Well, these days, but that's still, I still hope that those days are going away. Anyway, at some point you have to get up.
Right.
Okay.
Sure.
And so you have to like make sure you go to bed on time. And if you don't, it just gets bad. Everything falls apart. Your prayer life falls apart.
Yeah. Dang it. But the whole purpose of like what I was hoping to bring home at the very end, and I just forgot, was like the idea of keeping God present in your mind at all time, you know, to pray without ceasing, as St. Paul talks about, you know, to continue, filling your mind with holy, venerable things that you can offer up to God in prayer. And you can't do that if you're thinking about worldly things.
Right.
You know, that's why, like, that's when you're at a different level of sanctity, whenever you're able to wash the dishes for the love of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
You know, you're able to wash the dishes because I'm offering this moment up for him. I'm thinking about him. I'm not washing the dishes and thinking about how the guy at work badmouthed me, or how my wife should be helping me, or how, you know, the kids were driving me crazy today. I'm washing the dishes for the love of Jesus.
Right.
You know, and that is a level of sanctity that we all are called to, that we're all striving to get to if we're not there yet. And that you can't do that if you are, if you don't have custody of the mind.
Sure.
And I failed to say that.
Well, we wrapped it up with it right there now.
Yeah.
So there you go.
But.
All right, Juan.
I think we're good.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Holo is here to help. Holo is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Holo has something for everyone. Holo is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.holo.app/breadbox.